This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Presented by First Light, creating proven, versatile hunting apparel from merino base layers to technical outerwear for every hunt. First Light, go farther, stay longer.
Okay, this is a special love episode. It's like the love boat. We're in Southeast Alaska at our family fish shack with a whole bunch of people, a lot of people are familiar with. And Seth has, tell everybody, Seth's got big news. Went against my suggestion.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I did. I said do it at the waterfall.
No, you had a couple of suggestions. One of them being at the lake and one of them being at the waterfall.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Tell them what happened.
I proposed to Kelsey.
And I said yes.
So he proposed to the wildlife artist, Kelsey Johnson.
Yep.
Is that fair? Wildlife artist? Just artist?
Artist, painter. Western artist.
Tell everybody your Instagram thing so they can look at your stuff.
K_RayArtworks.
But Ray is spelled weird.
R-A-E.
Hey, no one would know that. If you've been running around your whole life telling people K Ray, they're not finding you.
Yeah, there's a demographic of people out there that have been looking for me this whole time.
And they think it's R-A-Y.
Yeah, right. But no, that's...
Tell everybody again.
K_Ray, R-A-E, Artworks with an S.
Yeah.
Western wildlife painter.
Very beautiful stuff.
Thank you.
And you have a piece that you're donating to our... we haven't launched it yet, but our auction house of oddities.
I do. Oil painting of a bighorn ram, kind of portrait style.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be in there.
You should go check out her work and buy some. But anyways, you said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cried.
Ugly cried.
How long you guys been dating?
What, 3 years?
Almost 3 years, yeah.
What I told Seth to do, well, we kicked around a handful of things. He was going to stick the ring. Explain that ring again.
It's a white buffalo, which is like people aren't familiar, it's like a white turquoise looking stone, which is my favorite. And it's three rings. It's surrounded by a setting made by Adorn Smith & Co., Emerson Graves.
Okay.
Which is my favorite jeweler. It's really pretty. It's just one of a kind.
Custom made.
You know, a lot of people, when you're getting married, they'll come out and they'll play like, here comes the bride.
Ugh.
You should be playing Great White Buffalo. Nugent's Great White Buffalo.
I like it. Dude, can you play my wedding? Man.
Come out with that ring, pumping that ring in there. Seth was thinking about putting that ring into a halibut stomach or a lingcod stomach and then having you there and gutting it and then being like, he's going to be like, let's see what it ate.
Yeah, the answer might have been different.
What do we have here? Well. Or I told him, take you up to the waterfall and have that ring just sitting in the gravel there.
Sounds dangerous.
And then he'd come up and be like, well, look at that little shiny little nugget.
we threw around a bunch of ideas.
But you took her up to the lake.
It was pouring rain.
Mm-hmm.
We paddled across the cove in the canoe, and Chet and Danielle came with us. Danielle's a wedding photographer, so.
You hid in the bushes.
She hid in the bushes.
The timing on this is pretty amazing because, Chester, I understand that right at the moment, you found an old boat, and under that boat was a fishing rod. And so you decided to take a poke.
There were two of them, yeah. And I knew they were going to propose. He was going to propose.
But you were getting bored.
But I found the fishing rod.
He's Chester, like, all right, buddy, let's get on with it.
Chester pulled a Chester move.
And he took a cast right at that moment.
I made a cast, and it went zing. And I look over, and Seth is on one knee. And I quick reeled in and ran over there.
Why the group deal? Most people do it privately. No, they don't. They don't do it privately. They do it at like baseball stadiums and stuff.
Yeah, like a big splash.
I saw a news story the other day about a dude who got down on one knee in front of got out on the stadium. Did you see this?
Mm-mm.
No.
It's horrible. Somehow he gets his girlfriend or whatever out on the pitcher's mound or something, like out in front of the whole damn, what do you call it, at a baseball game?
Stadium.
And there's all these cell phone videos of it. He gets down on one knee. Uh-oh. She puts her hands over her face and runs away.
Oh, brutal.
See, I can't do that here because...
She was not because she was nervous. She didn't want to marry that guy.
Yeah, see, I trapped her. She had nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. She said no. She's like...
She's in an awkward spot.
Right.
she wants to leave. She better call the float plane.
Got
to
paddle back.
I asked Seth what he was going to do if you said no, and then here you two are stuck up here.
Yeah.
He said he's just going to fish.
Yeah.
Which is what he did anyway.
Right.
So it's like kind of the same plan.
Same turnout.
Well, it being the exact same plan.
Yeah.
No, I asked him about 100 times if he was serious. That was my reaction.
Why do you want to be married to Seth so bad?
I love him.
Yeah.
Aw.
He's a lovable guy. I love him. why? More stuff about love, though. I don't know if I can talk about this. I'll just talk about it. If she gets mad at me, she gets mad at me. Do you remember Taylor Thorne, right? She taught me and Yanni how to do the... Were you there, Cal, when we did the three-gun thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, you were out of town or something like that.
I bailed at the last minute.
Didn't do
ammo shortage.
Yeah. Taylor Thorne taught us to do the three-gun video.
Yep.
Or taught us to do three-gun. We made a video. Like a bazillion people watched the video of us doing the three-gun thing, including some fireman who took a shine to her, and they just eloped.
Whoa.
Really?
And she said that in some way she has to give us credit.
Huh. Well, that's great.
She said she does stuff fast. Shoots fast, gets married fast.
I was going to say, that wasn't that long ago when you guys did that, right?
No, they eloped.
By credit, she means dowry. So that fireman owes us a chunk, just a little chunk of his pension.
Chunk of fire hose, chunk of pension.
Something.
Oh, the other thing. So, yeah, the cabin, the shack of love.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to get the details there, Andy.
No, probably not.
Joe, you haven't been on the show in forever. Chef Andrew Radulowski.
Yeah,
he comes up here every year and cooks at the fish shack.
VIP of the weekend.
Yeah. Oh, he may or may not have gotten lucky at the shack once. Many, many years ago, decades ago. My brother Danny got married here. My brother Matt realized he had to break up with one of his girlfriends up here.
I know.
Which he says offsets the love vibe.
I was telling Matt my plan for up here, and he went on to tell me all about the times he broke up with women and had bad things with women happen to him up here.
Yeah. His current wife doesn't come up here.
Is that
not,
why?
It's his only wife. Not his current wife. The only one he's ever been married to.
Is that why?
Because it's been she's disastrous. Busy in the summer. I don't know. And right there, like 20 feet away from here, we decided the year my brother Danny got married, me and my wife, standing right there next to the boat, decided to try having a baby.
Right next to the boat.
Right there. No, like, you know, I mean, like came to the decision.
Right on the rocks next to the boat.
Right on the rocks.
Came to the decision.
Was the tide going out or coming in?
You know, I can't remember. I could probably look back at the photography and look at the rocks and stuff and try to tell if they look like it was coming or going.
I think Chef Andrew Radulowski's cooking prowess is something to note, but it goes far beyond just coming up here to the shack and cook. Guy's out there marking halibut spots. He's got a jigging stroke that strike fear into any halibut out there.
Squares off to his fishing pole.
Nose is crabbing. Nose is shrimping.
Gotta stick him.
Any more you want to say about yourself, current situation or anything? Things new since you've been on, Andy?
Well, yeah, it's been a little bit. Still plugging away. Glad to be here, you know?
Well, I mean, on the love note, let's at least say, like, the only person I have ever met that has taken a Pulaski and carved a trail between his lady friend's house and his own.
He's so in love that they moved into houses next to each other.
Correct. keeps it fresh, you know?
That way you don't got to worry about it. When you see something laying on the floor, you just know it's yours.
Yeah.
You don't even think it's their thing. Oh, where we're sitting right now. So we're on Prince Wales Island, and this is interesting because this is a long burning debate. We're on Prince Wales Island right now. So if you're familiar with the town of Ketchikan and went due west out of Ketchikan, Ketchikan's on Revilla Island, and you went due west of there, you'd wind up out at Prince Wales Island. If you went east to Ketchikan, you'd wind up kind of you'd wind up in British Columbia. So we're down in that neck of the woods, southeast Alaska. The islands out here there's a wolf the wolves live out here. Some people just say they're regular old wolves. Some people say they're a special wolf called the Alexander Archipelago Wolf. And they are edging closer to Endangered Species Act protection. And it's been a contentious thing because you have wolves, a very healthy population of wolves that aren't on this island 20 miles from here. Do they get to be separate? Like, do they get to be regarded as their own thing because they're archipelago wolves?
Right. Are there defining features?
They eat a lot of salmon.
And, defining features and then defining habits that would separate them from mainland wolves, to put it simply.
Yep. My brother Danny, who's a biologist in Alaska, not referring to this, but he said of taxonomy, he said, you have your lumpers and you have your splitters, and they know who they are. Splitting, like this, in this case, splitting. So in this case, saying like, hey, these are different wolf. Splitting is often used as an environmental tool in the old toolbox for environmental battles, right? Where if you can point to anything and say that and make an argument that it's endemic or separate, you can usually get protections for landscapes. And you'll find the industry is usually trying to be like, nothing different about that wolf. Same old wolf. There's a bunch of them over here. Who cares about those ones? It's like an ongoing.
Yes.
There might be cases where industry wants to separate, but generally industry and commercial interests like to lump. And they want to be like, as long as there's a bunch of wolves somewhere, who cares?
And I imagine out here, this archipelago region, the issue would be habitat destruction, like timber.
Yeah.
Timber harvest, I would imagine, would be the number one thing. I cannot imagine anybody saying like all the wolves come in here and eat all the salmon. And there's no real dense like livestock type of agriculture for conflict, which is kind of like the main.
Yeah,
main deal
the main conflict stuff, is so. The main human conflict is competition for deer.
Yeah.
So they did they have around here, they have various seasons, and they loosened the wolf hunting season, and people got a lot of wolves recently. It kind of shocked people how quickly they got so many wolves, which made people think there's more wolves than typical. But anyways, this has been a long simmering thing. But yeah, if you have an island and the island's 10 miles away from another island and that island's 10 miles away from the mainland or whatever the hell, is it fair to say that the things that live there are their own species?
Have these wolves always been on this island? Yeah. Forever.
Yep. Yeah. Swam out here. However the hell they got here.
Yeah.
You know, interesting deal. You know how people used to, there used to be a theory about human migrations that humans crossed, the first Americans crossed the Bering Land Bridge.
Yep.
And then approached what's now the lower 48 through the mid-continent. They used to have this idea that it was an ice-free corridor and that humans must have emerged down to the Great Plains, like south of Edmonton, Alberta. And that was like the hot idea for a long time. The currently fashionable idea is that people crossed the Bering Land Bridge and then island hopped in boats.
Oh.
Down. Because people, now that we know how long ago people arrived in the New World, the ice-free corridor thing doesn't make sense. Like,
yeah.
They were there. They were down in, like, Chile earlier than there would have been a ice-free route. So they must have come down the coast.
Yep.
And there's a lot of interest in these islands around here, meaning that you might find it's plausible that the oldest New World human occupation sites are on these islands.
On them.
Really?
Even though the shoreline that they were inhabiting is underwater.
Yeah.
By a lot. You know, it's a couple hundred feet underwater. Yeah. But that what would have been mountaintops then are mountaintops now, and that you might find very old. There could be like somewhere around here, very, very old sites from like the real first people.
Man, it'd be hard to find though. Everything is just covered in moss.
Yeah,
it is. But like tie it back to the wolves, right? Where humans who leave things behind that you can find, other than just bones, you know, stone points.
Yep.
Maybe some artwork, maybe some structures here and there. And we still don't know how the hell they exactly ended up where they ended up. And then you have wolves that don't leave around the extra stuff. It would just be bones. It's kind of like we learn so much new every year, it seems, about how things get around. It's like, is this archipelago wolf really different just because we don't know for sure how it got from point A to point B?
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of the argument that pops up to me. I mean, we know like how far Alaskan brown bears swim from, they'll swim to islands that you cannot see.
Jeez.
And you know, it's off of like a scent more than likely, but it blew people's minds when radio collars came out and they're like, oh, we had a bear swim from this island to this island.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't think that was possible.
Yeah. Oh, back to that wolf thing. So this is primarily being brought by petition from the Center for Biological Diversity and Defenders of Wildlife, who don't self-identify as anti-hunting organizations, but my God, you'd get the impression.
They're tied into a lot of stuff that would, I think, conservation-minded hunters would enjoy, and a lot of things that conservation-minded hunters would not like.
You know how this is like the Shack of Love?
Mm-hmm.
Man, did I get in a big fight out here one time with one of our co-owners, with Dan Bogan.
Mm-hmm.
Me and him got in a huge fight when I said that when I was describing the Centers for Biological Diversity as an anti-hunting organization, he got pissed.
Because he can rattle off some good stuff.
Yeah, I got pissed. All riled up.
Good guy.
Okay, Cal, explain the... Senator Heinrich emailed me about this. They were getting closer. Explain Recovering America's Wildlife Act, which is getting close.
Okay, so Recovering America's Wildlife Act, or RAWA, is a big package. What this kicked off at least 4 or 5 years ago, big chunk of work done under the Trump administration. And basically, it is a bunch of federal funding for state wildlife and giving state wildlife managers the tools they need and tribal wildlife managers the tools they need to protect sensitive species. Every state, the tribes were asked to come up with species of concern. And that could be plants, pollinators, to mammals.
In total, 12,000 species in the United States.
12,000 species. And there was a lot of back and forth on like what should make the list. But basically, states were asked to like, give me your top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, give me the most important. And all of a sudden, we have the opportunity to try to get this thing passed. It's seen a lot of bipartisan support. We need everyone to contact their duly elected representatives and tell them to get on board, ideally co-sign on Recovering America's Wildlife Act, because if we act fast prior to the end of August here, which is our current session, this could get incorporated and voted on as part of the big infrastructure package.
Oh yeah.
Which would be lightning fast and fantastic. One super encouraging thing is Senator Blunt out of Missouri. Missouri, if folks don't know, is like, they have a wildlife program in that state that's like the envy of every single state.
Yeah, when you register your car. Like car, like driver, your license plate, right?
It's like every chunk of, it's like a 0.88, it's like an eighth of a cent goes directly to wildlife of all like state associated sales tax.
It's off sales tax.
Yeah.
Man, he winds up being a huge amount of money.
And it allows that agency to do all the things that all states want to do, like all the educational outreach. The Missouri Conservation Magazine goes out to like everybody, and every couple of years, some greedy state politician wants to reach into that bucket and take money out of it for some other program. And the public, the citizens of Missouri, always smack it down. It's really cool to see. But it's kind of like a Pittman Robertson type of deal where it's like, if you brought it up today, we'd probably no way it would pass. But since it got put in place, people are really proud of it. And, the wildlife agency in Missouri, does a great job over there. So
isn't it funny, the things that we're so proud of that we would never pass, that are overwhelmingly popular today, that would not have a prayer to pass today. The Wilderness Act, which had like a 99-1 vote in the Senate. You couldn't get that thing passed now, but everybody's so like, oh, good gracious, we did the Wilderness Act.
Yeah.
You never get it.
Because it's not about the act itself. It's about what people can, okay, well, if I vote for this act that everybody knows is a good idea,
yeah,
then I get something. Right. And it gets bogged down in that, in the BS. But, almost $1 billion for tribes. Every state has input, and it really is supposed to be giving the tools to the states that they need to manage the wildlife. Has a lot of bipartisan support, but we need a lot more folks. So
$1.3 billion in dedicated annual funding for proactive on the ground efforts across the country, $97.5 million annually to tribal nations. This version introduced by Roy Blunt from Missouri, Senators Roy Blunt from Missouri and Martin Heinrich from New Mexico. Martin comes on the show often to explain various things.
Passionate guy. Yeah. Really, really good deal. You know, we got a lot of good stuff passed under the Trump administration by, folks, you know, writing in and playing the game, you know, contacting your duly elected, and we need to make sure it gets done under the Biden administration as well. And a lot of this stuff got built under the, during the Trump years. So
if you remember, we had Whit Fosberg, the president and CEO of Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, on, and he was saying that paradoxically, you like that? Use that word.
I like how your lips are kind of swollen up from
they're chapped, dude.
From jellyfish bites.
Paradoxically, when there is a lot of discord and discontent and fractious arguing in D.C., is a good time to come in and get conservation work done. Because they can't get anything done. All the contentious shit, they can't get taken care of. And everybody, and so they're looking to be like, that we're doing something.
Yes, exactly.
And when there's a good conservation bill that has a lot of bipartisan support, the enviros like it, hunters and anglers like it, it lets them sign stuff and do feel-good stuff.
Because
if not, everybody's sitting back being like, what are you people doing?
That's the deal. It's like, they are your representatives, so you can always call in and be like, yeah, I see you're not getting anything passed. Like, we voted you in there for a reason. What's going on?
Yeah, so when they're all like fighting over the culture wars and
yeah,
who plays what sports and whatnot, and they're all fighting about that, then they say do some conservation work.
Yep. So this is a good one. This is a good one. I've already been doing some writing in and some phone calling. And
you covering this on Cal's Week in Review, blow by blow?
I have, yeah. I started and then working on an article for themeateater.com. It's probably already out.
Oh, you know, did you come up with that? I noticed on your fillet knife, it says Cal, and someone made it say Caliente. Is that your idea?
That was my idea.
Dude,
yeah.
That's solid, man. You know what that means, Seth? It's Espanol.
Yeah, I know, but...
Hot.
Okay.
Hot.
That's a Casey Hawks original from First Light. Casey Hawks.
Yeah, Caliente. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, another interesting news item. We covered this. Arizona, which is the most trail cam in state on the face of the planet, recently banned trail cams for the purpose of taking or aiding in the taking of wildlife or locating wildlife for the purpose of taking or aiding. Huh? I sometimes feel like someone could do a quick editorial pass on some of this. Not our stuff, law stuff. Outlawing them, quote, for the purpose of taking or aiding in the take of wildlife or locating wildlife for the purpose of taking or aiding in the take of wildlife. How do you like that?
Isn't that the same thing?
Yeah. I think what that boils down is you can't use them for hunting.
Right.
Meanwhile, Wisconsin is stepping up on the trail cam game. Wisconsin's starting a thing called Snapshot. They're DNR, so they're Fish and Wildlife Agency, encouraging people to get the trail cams out. And then you make them online, and it has to do with monitoring wildlife and creating a resulting database for management decisions. It's a citizen monitoring wildlife project.
It's citizen science. There are all sorts of awesome, bird, plant, bug, down to, constellation apps that you can get on your phone. And folks have discovered species thought to be extinct by, downloading these apps and being like, oh, what is this? I wrote about a guy in, I think, Colombia who was going in to use the toilet, and a weasel came out of his toilet and stood on it.
Yep, I remember that.
And took a picture of it.
And it was a weasel they thought had gone extinct?
Yes. Yeah. So he rediscovered a species that they thought had been extinct, which is super cool. Always have your phone with you when you're going to the John. And then...
remember me and the guy that got in the big fight about Center for Biological Diversity?
Yeah.
Well, I had a trail cam set up on the trail up here. And his wife went to pee, and he pulled my card, never got that card back.
Anyway, yeah, these cameras are fantastic tools. They're very inexpensive. A lot of people have them for a lot of reasons now. And they definitely can add to this. You can also go and we saw a lot of this come up during COVID, where people doing, let's say, shark research,
yeah,
but don't have the funds to go out and do an actual, a self-assessment of fish stocks, shark stocks in this case. They actually they got grad students to comb through Twitter instead, and using hashtags, pull up recent pictures and say through these 10,000 photos taken the last X amount of time from these, geotagged areas.
Yeah.
This is what we have,
Yeah.
So, it is valuable.
Corinne thinks everyone from Arizona who's bummed should move to Wisconsin. Or, she's not here right now, but I'm looking at what she wrote. Or, if you're in Arizona and you're bummed about this whole thing, go and explain to your people about this stuff.
Yeah.
And say, look what we're missing out on.
I want to know Chef Radulowski's take on moving a bunch of Arizona folks up to Wisconsin and what that would do to the palate up there.
Yeah, that'd be a
no
little...
spice.
Well, Chet would be a good one to talk to. He's the Wisconsin native, but
two brats on a hard roll.
Yeah.
Sheboygan hard roll. No, they don't like spice in Wisconsin. Yeah. So. Some people do, but
it's pretty cheese and sausage.
Remember how we were covering off on that, whether that dude should be allowed to name his kid, his last name's Fisher, and he wants to name it Hunter Fisher?
Yep.
Someone sent us in a newspaper clipping about a guy named Hunter, last name Hunter, marrying a woman whose last name was Fisher. No, Tyler Fisher, Audra Hunter, dude named Fisher marrying a woman, last name Hunter. And they made a little koozie to commemorate the wedding.
Yep.
It says, party your bass off or get the buck out. Fisher Hunter.
Fisher Hunter.
That's cute. That's more stuff on love.
This, yeah, it's a podcast of love.
That just seems like you're setting yourself up for something that you got to explain every single time somebody sees it down the road. Like if you want that little memento from your wedding. What? Oh, you know, the Hunter Fisher. And then people loved it at the time, I swear.
So I want to follow up and find out if she took his name or not.
If I were her, I would just combine it.
Hyphenate it, dude. Yeah. And then have kids.
Right.
Name them Joe.
Joe Fisher Hunter?
No, Joe Hunter Fisher.
Joe Hunter Fisher.
Dude, I wish my name was that.
Do like angler or
yeah.
Forager.
Yeah, Forager Hunter Fisher.
Yeah.
Start a little Instagram page.
Yeah.
That's what people your age, that's all you guys think about.
Instagram. Graham.
All right, speaking of love. Chester, we've had Chester on many times. Danielle.
Yes, you have.
tell people about how little fish you've eaten in your life.
Well, let's see. It's pretty shit up creek to none.
Yeah. And who's the uncle?
I can't give his name. I'm kidding. It's my Uncle Dale.
Uncle Dale.
And to be fair, yeah.
Does he listen to this show? Does he know about it?
I don't know. But the first time I ate fish was with him, and I was actually 5.
And he caught a salmon.
He caught a salmon, cooked it up. But to give him a
Dale
little...
Uncle Dale salmon.
But...
This is when you were 5 years old?
Yeah, how do you remember...
I have a good memory. I have a good memory.
Never forgets.
Never forgets a taste.
Yeah, that's good.
Anyway, it was not a good taste.
So when you're 5, Uncle Dale went on a fishing trip. You don't know where he went.
Nope, don't know nothing.
Mooching? Working the river mouths? What was he doing?
I don't know. All I know is he had a fish and I had to clear my plate. I was 4, like growing up, you had to clear your plate before you were.
Sure,
like,
man.
Yep. So yeah. He made me eat that whole thing and I was like.
Clean your plate, clean plate club.
Yep, I was clean the plate.
And you clean plate club Uncle Dale's salmon dish and then took 20 years off.
Yep. Well, so yeah, I ended up not eating salmon again after that. But I was also young. When you're like a kid, you're so picky. Kids are so picky with what they eat.
Right.
So I could have just been like, you know, I didn't like the taste. I don't know what it was. Yeah. But I just, from then on, I was like, I'm not trying that again until I came up here and had some of Andy's salmon. It was delicious.
Yeah, but that also ruined you on all
other
fish.
Yeah, it did. I think I had this like persona of like, everything is going to taste fishy. Yeah. And I didn't like, that's the taste I didn't like was the fishy taste. So, but I've had fish sticks and I've tried like walleye.
You never go to Long John Silver's or anything like that. We covered oftenness last night.
Can't say that I've done that. Nope.
Do you know there's a place called Long John Silver's?
Did not know that.
Andy, explain how you cook the salmon in order to win. Oh, another quick question. Why do they call you Don?
You know, I got the nickname from a guy. Was it that we hung out with a lot? A friend. I don't know how.
It's just more fun to say. It's D-A-H-N.
Something.
Don.
Don. You can really. Don.
Don. Don. Depends on, you know, the mood of the situation. If you're Don or Don.
Back to the fish thing, though. It's, Danielle's my wife, and she doesn't give things a good shot sometimes when it comes to game or fish. But I feel like coming up here, I'm super proud of you. So, like, giving it a shot.
She's been eating fish her ass off.
Yeah. I've been.
Is that a sentence?
I like it. I like it, though. No, I knew that was actually coming up here when Chester, you know, told me about this opportunity. I was, A, really excited for, like, just to see everything out here and be out of my comfort zone. Because at home, I didn't grow up in the woods doing stuff. All I did was sports growing up. My mom worked a lot, so I didn't go camping every weekend with my mom.
And you started working when you're 9 years old.
Yeah, pretty much. My dad was never really in the picture, so I kind of just been, you know, I just worked and played sports, and that was my favorite thing to do. I learned the, you know, meaning of money at a young age, and if I wanted something, I had to work for it. So yep. If I wanted 100 pair of dollar jeans in high school, I had to pay for it, which, why did I do that?
Nobody knows.
But I mean... Yeah. I guess I never grew up eating this stuff. And Chester, as everyone knows, he's allergic to it.
We haven't covered off on that.
Oh, okay. Well, he's my husband's a old fishing guide who could not eat fish, and he's allergic to it. So we don't cook it at home.
He's been going gangbusters on the shellfish.
He's been going nuts.
So, Andy, explain your salmon cooking. So, Andy lives on San Juan Island, correct, south of here. But you guys eat all kinds of fish.
Yeah, yeah. It's rich in seafood over there. But that salmon the other night actually had quite a bit of a journey to get to the dinner table. we got on the silvers up at Frank's and flayed them up, came back, and fired up the grill outside. Had all intentions to get a nice little crispy skin on that on the grill. And as we threw it on, we had a little propane malfunction. Grill kind of went down to a little whimper of a flame. So quick, brought it inside, threw it into a hot pan, and then went to finish it in the oven. And the pilot light was out in the oven, so we had to start back over. But all said and done, by the time it got there, I put a little honey mustard glaze on it. It was actually pretty dang good.
So good.
Fantastic. It was absolutely.
Was awesome. Yeah, we overcame the.
You like to do a skin side down.
Salmon. If the grill.
No, I'm sorry. Not skin side.
Flesh side down. If you have a ripping hot grill, or what I prefer.
Yeah, give salmon cooking 101.
Man. Well, I have a couple grills at my house, but my favorite way to do is I've got a flat top grill, so a big cast iron, you know, flat top. And get that thing smoking hot, a little bit of oil and flesh side season, you know, generously, and then flesh side down until that thing just tells you when it's ready and just starts to curl. And that cast iron's, if it's seasoned right, you just get up under there and flip the whole fillet over, and it's just got that perfect little crust on there. And then finish it with the skin down. You get a little bit of crisp on that skin, and it's money.
And you can do that on just a regular barbecue grill too, right?
Sure. If you're confident in your grill not sticking, you know, it's all about the heat. If you can get that heat high enough and you have a good seasoned grill surface, it shouldn't be a problem. But in the same note, you can do that kind of stuff in a cast iron pan inside, you know, what I was explaining about the flat top grill. The only downfall of that is if you don't have a good hood system, your house is stinking like fish for a couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, if you're really searing fish where it's like, white hot with just that oil starting to smoke, that's where you want it to put that flesh side down. But then, yeah, your house is going to stink a little bit.
My wife used to get mad at me when the bath towels smelled like fish.
Yeah, you know, 3 days later.
You know you've been cooking fish.
Yeah.
What else I'm going to ask you about cooking? Oh, talk about how you fry fish.
Well, there's a lot of different...
That's good-ass fried fish.
I prefer breading opposed to a batter dip. I mean, batter dip's good for some applications, but I just find it gets... that some people get a little too heavy with the batter.
I don't like
so
batter.
So you got a half inch of batter.
Do you call that batter or breading?
When you get like traditional fish and chips, that's usually a beer batter.
Yeah, I like that.
But a lot of restaurants or home cooks do it where there's just like a half inch thick breading before you get to the fish. And it's not cooked properly, and by the time it gets into the center, you kind of have that soggy breading in there, and it just kind of mushes the fish out a little
bit. Oh, yeah, you give that to your kids, and it winds up being that they eat all that, and then the middle is like some little chunk of fish.
Yeah.
Because they picked all that garbage off the outside of it.
So I prefer to do more of a breading on there where I would take usually dry breadcrumbs mixed with a little bit of flour and some seasoning. Sometimes I even throw a little bit of cornstarch in there or rice flour, something that's going to give it that real nice crispness. And I usually do the three into the flour, into the egg wash, and then press it hard into the breadcrumbs. And the key to that is hot oil. You know, if your oil temperature is too low, 375 or below, 350 or below, you're going to get soggy fish.
Do you aim? I typically aim for 350.
Hot. Yeah, because your oil's going to, the temperature is going to plunge once you put all that cold fish in there.
So you aim for 375.
Yeah, I always go a little hot, and then it comes down. And then another trick is if you're doing rounds, let the oil recoup and let it get back up to temp. Because a lot of times you're rushing and you throw it right back in there, but that oil's plummeted so far down that everything's going to get soggy in there.
For big groups like this, though, do you have, like, what's your trick when you're doing rounds, like multiple rounds of fried fish? And this would be applicable at your house too, Steve. Getting your first batch and your second batch to, like, match up by the time it hits the table in one round.
Yeah, it's tricky. We were running two fryers the other night, which is nice. We had actual electric fryer that kind of, you know, maintains that temperature pretty well. And then we had
and flirts with like burning this whole place down.
Yeah. Let me step in here and say
everything kind of flirts with that, but
I get a Dutch oven lined up with paper towels.
Yeah.
Take a load off, dump it in there, and don't put the lid on all the way because I want steam to get away.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That keeps them warm.
And then you're just keeping that outside. You're not throwing it back in the oven.
Keep right next to that.
Okay.
I think the other trick to good fried fish is, well, there's a couple things, is the thickness that you cut it. And I've been working on this for the last couple of years, just really trying to dial it in. Too thin, and that fish is overdone by the time your breading's going to get that nice color on it.
Oh.
Too thick, and you're not going to achieve, you're going to still have a little raw fish before that breading starts to get too dark. So it's you got to hit right in that sweet spot.
Mm. You know how I can see hits out the back of my head when someone's got a hit on their rod?
Yeah.
Even on other boats. It's true, dude. It's like a curse, man. I see every hit.
Did you see our hit?
I could probably feel it.
You could probably hear mine.
Oh yeah.
Anyways, frying fish, I somehow the sound, the vibe, I just can tell when it's done.
Oh, you need all your senses to know when it's done. You really do. It's smell.
There's something like the bubbling. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's the other trick, is to pull it. It's you almost have to lead it, right? You want to pull it when you.
Oh, you got
to
lead it. Yeah.
You got to think. When you think it's still a little bit raw, that's when you pull it and let it sit for 2 minutes, and then it's boom, it's right there.
Yeah.
Should be that nice, translucent, like flaky. Because there's nothing worse than overcooked fish. I mean,
I was at a gun range in Washington State one time, and I got to talking to the dude next to me at the gun range, and he learned where I was from Michigan, and somehow he felt basically that I was from Wisconsin. And was telling me about when he lived in Wisconsin, and I kept on being like, I'm actually from, didn't matter. It was very much like the same region.
Wisconsinites, really, if you think someone's from Wisconsin, there's like an immediate, like, bonding that you have. You're like, oh, you're from Wisconsin? So I can see why that happened.
Michigan. Well, no, he was from Washington.
Oh, really?
Met me. Oh, I told him I'm from Michigan, and he proceeded to talk to me as though I'm from Wisconsin. Like, in his head, just no difference.
Yeah.
Right? Anyhow, he was telling me how he was in the military. I can't remember what the hell he was. But anyways, he met a girl and almost got married, but then changed his mind at the last minute, moved back to Washington. And he said the defining part of the decision, as he said, one night I said to myself, do I really feel like sitting around here eating fried fish every Friday?
That's what
I remember thinking, give me that lady's number.
Well, we all grew up in the Midwest. I mean, that's you, myself, and Chester, but that's a staple on a Friday night.
Oh, dude, fish fry. Yeah. Love fried fish, man. And people apologize about it now, but I don't.
No. Why would you?
Andy, how'd you do your sauce? That homemade sauce?
Yeah, the tartar sauce was so good.
Oh, yeah. That was just, God, what was that? I threw some pickles in there. I think a little trick to that is I always spill a little pickle juice into the mayo and gives it a little zing. But that had some chopped up capers and garlic and...
Thinking Man's tartar sauce.
Yeah.
Is anyone hungry yet?
It was good.
You throw pickle juice in there.
Yeah. Gives it that. Get a little lemon juice too. Yeah, it kind of thins it down, and it kind of gives it that little briny goodness.
Kelsey, tell me your biggest biggest impression, Southeast Alaska impression.
Oh my God.
Biggest three, whatever. Your face is looking better.
Thank you.
Got a little puffy this morning.
Yeah, you thought I was all depressed this morning because I woke up with a little congestion and thought I was crying about my engagement.
Steve
asked if we had broken off.
I know, this is gonna be awkward as hell, like, if they broke off.
I'm like, no, I've just been here for 5 days and I'm puffy. This has been the best trip ever. I mean, it's like, come on, for me, never been to Alaska. I love the scenery, the wildlife, the fishing, like just the experience. I don't know if you want to call it an experience, but like got engaged. had all my friends here, my dog. We had so much fun.
Caught your first halibut.
Caught my first halibut, caught my first salmon, caught my first greenling. Like
kelp greenling.
Yep. Yeah. Lots of firsts.
What would you say your biggest strength and weakness biggest strengths and weaknesses as a halibut fisherman are?
The weakness is the reeling for sure. Reeling that sucker up, I'm like, this is a 100-pounder. Tough. Get it up. I don't know. What was my biggest one? Like 25 pounds, which is still decent.
Yeah, it was. We never weighed it, but it was 25, 30 pounder.
They're tough to get in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably, I don't know, strength. My napping skills are pretty high up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important.
You throw that reel on click, loosen the drag. Drape the line over between your toes or something.
Pretty much.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a good picture of us all pretty much laid out in the boat,
mm-hmm.
napping.
I heard that pulled up and you guys all perked up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we couldn't let you see us slacking.
But you generally enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed the hell out of it. Yeah, it's a great time. And the benefits will last. We have a lot of fish.
Yeah, we're going over.
And I spread the love.
I love fish. Seafood. So I'm going to be remembering this one for a long time.
So this means that Seth might as well slow down on walleye fishing.
Get right.
You got all that fish.
Hey.
That makes sense.
Pull the reins back there.
We were talking, we told you this morning, we're up, you know, we've been here for 5 days and we've just been fishing our ass off. And it's been amazing. And we're going home today, but Chester and Seth, you know, saying goodnight to everybody last night, the last thing they said was, Seth was like, hey, Chester, do you want to go fishing on Sunday?
Did they make a little date?
Oh, yeah, they made a date already. Like,
oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Because you guys are becoming tournament walleye fishermen.
Next year. Yep. We're hitting the Montana circuit.
We're going to sponsor you guys.
Yep.
We're going to try and do something super cool with our winnings, too, when we take them all.
If we win.
Yeah, you guys, to explain what you're going to do with all your with your winnings.
We don't really know yet. We're going to consult with Uncle Cal over there because he's good with that kind of stuff. Conservation. We'd like to maybe do some fishing access stuff, maybe some fish cleaning facilities.
Yep.
We got
improve some access.
Yeah, for the lake that you...
Yeah.
If you gave the purse money to the leading issue that the lake you won the purse in has around access enhancement facilities.
Yep. Improving a boat ramp, fish cleaning stations, whatever. Porta potties. Who knows? Whatever. We'll figure out from someone who knows what the area needs.
We might not win anything.
Yeah, we might not.
No, that's a bad attitude.
I'll tell you what. A buddy of mine is a ranger in an area, pretty affluent area, and people are always looking to make donations to get the trailheads up to what they think is the shape they should be in and things like that. But everybody wants like some grand, beautiful trail or something with their name on it. But really what they need are outhouses, and nobody wants their name on a shitter. So, man, if you guys
could
take off
Seth.
on a tear on the walleye circuit and have a shitter named after you at every boat ramp, I'd be all about it.
Yeah,
I would call it the Go Take a Chester.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be down to donate a shitter.
Shitter's
I'd probably
full.
Use it. Exactly.
Well, I mean,
he'd cut in line all the time.
You could work in that quality control is part of the deal.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Seth, hit me with your biggest like Southeast Alaska impressions. I mean, you've been here before, but still.
I've been here before. Man, I was hooked on the halibut fishing this time around. Last time it was just like cool to see everything.
Mm-hmm.
But especially because I struggled. I caught like one halibut the first day and then went a couple days struggling. So that just made me want to.
Well, you broke your fishing reel.
Yeah, oh. I broke my fishing reel on the first day.
Brand spanking new.
Brand spanking new. and which made me struggle the rest of the trip fishing with a broken reel. But just, man, everything, there's so much life up here.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything that you can do. We were out at Frank's trying to catch salmon, and Chester discovered you could vertical jig spinners for flounder and sculpins.
Made you feel like you're fishing walleye.
Yeah. And you can sight
fish vertical jigging
in
shallow water.
You look down, you can like five to whatever, 15 feet, however, you know, till you can't see anymore. But yeah, you just vertical jig, and it looks like nothing's down there, but all of a sudden you put that spinner on the bottom and jig it up and down a little bit, and like these little flounder just come out of nowhere. That was cool. All the shrimp, the crab,
mm-hmm.
bears everywhere, deer, mink running around. I don't know. Out of all the meat eater trips we've ever done, this is still my favorite. Like the meat eater trip we did up here was my favorite one out of everything.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like this area.
You know, there's all the, we're largely surrounded by Tongass National Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a lot of back and forth, but right, you know, they were going to do, you hear a lot about the Tongass roldless rule.
Mm-hmm.
They're always debating whether to cut a bunch of more road up here to access more old growth timber.
Yep.
And it seems like that's going to be off again, at least till the next presidential election.
Right. Cause what was your like personal experience with the effects of like some of the logging practices, not necessarily like logging in general, but the logging practices here out in your area?
Well, historically, there was effects to the land and effects to the water. They would, so out here, there's a lot of what's called marine based logging, where you're coming in on small islands or in areas where there's no road system. And it's like, you have to establish a beachhead. You know, like they blasted one in over not far from us 4 or 5 years ago. That was on tribal land. They're quitting now, but the tribal corporations up here, so Sea Alaska is a tribal corporation here that represents coastal tribes. They have very expansive land holdings. And they, up until very recently, have been extremely aggressive around old growth logging, old growth rainforest logging. And they did a monster cut not far from us. And they're wrapping that cut up earlier than expected. I guess they weren't getting the yield off that they thought they would. But they come in and dynamite in a landing. And then they're pulling all that timber out, and they raft the timber in the water.
Float it.
Yeah, they float it. They create these massive, I mean, we're talking about many, you know, hundreds of acres of raft logs when it's all said and done. The weirdest thing about that, and these cuts up here, is a lot of that incentive to log comes from the death of the mill towns in that industry. This logging project, when they do it here, that stuff goes from the woods into the water. It goes on barges, and it is shipped in the round directly to Asia. It never sets foot in an American town.
No way.
Yeah, that all goes in the round to Asia, to be milled in Asia. It goes on ships out to the sea. Not milled here.
Yeah, they make shit with it over there, and then we bring it back over.
So the land effects are obvious, and they're not all negative, right? Like the clear cuts are amazing deer. If you like to hunt deer,
yeah, the fresh growth that comes in there, yeah. Because this is true rainforest, right? So like when you're sitting here and you look, I was looking at like possibly some trees to cut, and then trying to imagine what kind of headaches that would cause. Like you have this dark undergrowth that is really open. But if you were to cut trees out and allow a lot more direct sunlight in,
mm-hmm.
it's not like that would just remain open with more sunlight. That would then get a bunch of growth responding to that direct sunlight.
Like a jungle.
And all of a sudden the kids wouldn't be able to run back and forth down here, right? So you got to think about that stuff. But that's what's going to happen in those cuts.
That gives a job to the kids. That's right. Get up there and clear that out.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than looking at a fresh clear cut. To me, it's just ugly. It's just
they're not.
I'm not even getting into the. I know the economic stuff and all that, like it's jobs. I'm just saying, like, very personally, very subjectively, to look at a clear cut of old growth hemlock and cedar and sitka spruce is ugly to me. But man, you give that stuff a few years and it loads up with deer.
Yeah.
And then it kind of enters a long, like, not very productive cycle. In fact, when we first started coming up here, we used to hunt a clear cut at the time. It was like 7 or 8 years old. It was spectacular. And then now it's gotten to the point where it's just nothing.
It's too thick.
It gets too high, too high and too thick to hunt. So there's that advantage. But one of the unforeseen things, and when we had that clear cut coming in where we're at now, this was a big debate, is when you raft those logs, they shed their bark. And there was a cove near here, I mean, very close, you could see it from here, that they rafted lumber in when they did the cut I was talking about. And it turned that, it's a large cove network. It is a completely sterile environment now. You used to be able to crab it. Like, nothing lives there.
Just covered
you could
the bottom.
Set all the crab pots in the world in that cove. Nothing lives there.
Huh.
And it winds up being many, many feet of bark that just suffocates the seafloor. When they put the clear cut in near here, they had to determine an area where they determined an area they felt was non-sensitive. And some local people pushed back on it, but in the end, they rafted the logs in the area where they felt it was a viable place to raft logs. And completely anecdotally, and take for granted, I'm not here that much, right? We're in and out over a month every year.
Yeah.
I can't point to, like, we shrimp near there and stuff. I can't point to any obvious impact from that, but I don't know that it's not there.
Yeah.
But they might be more careful about the selection now. But it's a strange process. And the other thing they do here is helicopter logging, which is great because then you just select cut. From a hunting perspective, the only thing that does is when they helicopter log an area, man, you cannot get through it. It's tough navigating.
Oh, it's horrible. Steve dropped me off there one day and he's like, oh yeah, just walk up here. There'll be some deer in there, I think. It just got logged. Should be easy walking.
Yeah.
And it's like, you are crawling underneath trees to then get up on top of trees to then go underneath trees.
Yeah, and the topography's so broken. You'd be like climbing on some dead log and you jump on another dead log and also you look down and you realize you're 20 feet off the, you're like 20 feet off like the ground.
On like a soap slippery log, you know, that's like rotten.
In your rain boots.
Right, and you're like, oh, that's not good. Nobody's going to find me in here ever. Yeah. This is my first time diving up here, doing a little snorkeling and free diving. And it's absolutely mind blowing how much life there is when you're looking at the seafloor here. Like it is a living seafloor. It's not like sand and some turtle grass and the occasional crab. It's like every square inch of the ground out here in these bays is alive.
Yeah, that's a good point. You could put your hand down anywhere and you'd be laying your hand on a living organism.
Absolutely.
Not like silica, not just like sand or rock or whatever. You put your hand down, it's like your hand is laying on living organisms.
Without doubt. So that it would be like another great example of Steve's like lumpers and splitters thing and like how the ESA can be used to protect areas. You know, you could very well go in, like, if you really wanted to do a survey of one of these bays that they're going to potentially raft a bunch of logs in, I'm sure you could go through there with the right people and really cover it well and find some, you know, tiny sea star or something where you're like, oh, not a lot of these left.
Yeah.
Not here.
But here, often you're dealing with, in this area, you're often dealing with sort of the most effective tool against environmental degradation is the subsistence community. If you're impacting subsistence hunters and fishermen who say that, you know, not say, whose food and sustenance comes from those resources, that is a that's a force to be reckoned with. And so for there, it's like you know, they'll push like that's shrimp ground, that's crab ground to select stuff. But recently, this corporation here, this tribal corporation that owns most of the coastline here, they're going to do a 90, they're going to phase it out right now, and they're going to take a 99-year break from old growth logging.
Wow.
Well, I wonder what...
Which is a like major decision.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an entire lifetime of work off for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, so. A 99-year hiatus. No, I guess they'll reassess in 99 years. It's incredible.
The thinking about the subsistence living up here, too, it's like a week at the fish shack is like a crash course in logistics. On like, you see this cup of sugar? Where'd this cup of sugar come from? You know, Andy's doing the food spreadsheets for this place. And, you know, you were talking this morning about the kids grabbing random packs of oatmeal.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, that's somebody's breakfast.
Yeah. You just ate Thursday's breakfast.
Yeah.
On Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's actually one of my favorite parts of this coming up here is the logistics of getting everything out here and making it all work. It's definitely has to be fairly fine tuned to make it all work, or else you can get yourself in a little trouble.
Well, it's so funny because we're not in the middle of nowhere. Like, really, if you zoomed out a little bit, there are people everywhere. There's, you know, commercial planes flying into a place not very far from here as the crow flies. And it's still like, you got to really have your thinking cap on if you're going to have your fuel, your groceries, all your stuff dialed for a week, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hardware stuff, big time.
I'm going to skip ahead. I wanted to hit everybody's primary impressions, but no, I'm skipping ahead to me because you just brought up one of the things I was going to mention. First, one thing I like the most is the way when a good halibut shows up in town, he never gets caught the first time. Like how bad at aiming they are. Do you know what I mean? Where we'd be like, bump, had a bump. Bump, had another bump. Someone else is like, just had a bump. Like, you just imagine him down there.
Oh, he's going around to everybody.
Yeah.
And sometimes five or six times before someone buttons into him. And like, when one shows up, he's generally going to get caught.
Yeah.
You know, when you start getting like a... And sometimes he'll hit three times before he gets himself hooked. It makes you wonder how they get by.
I was thinking I would love to just have like a bird's eye view of what's going on down there.
Like old lower ice fishing camera down there to watch how he works the baits.
Because we're up there for, you know, some of these days we're up there for 8 hours and not knowing what's going on down there.
Mm-hmm. And then one shows up and like, oh,
bam.
Or you're Andy and you're just quiet and you just see him over there. And he's got a 50-pounder on.
Well, Andy... I think it was your biggest one, right? That
you were so quiet.
You like had him on for like three or four cranks.
We had no idea.
And then he got off and you sent it back down. Then you caught him again.
Yeah. I had him on for a minute. And then just like Steve was saying, then all of a sudden he came back around and I wasn't going to miss that second time.
Yeah. But the whole time you were just cool as a cucumber.
Yeah. We're like, oh.
Can't tip your hand.
In our boat, the late 20s boat, when we were reeling something up, it was just chaos. Sounded like childbirth going on.
Look at me.
We had Kelsey made this comment and we were like, okay, like how much longer should we be here? We're like, oh, I'll give it 20 minutes. And I hear Kelsey go, we've been here 6 hours. And I was like, we have?
Yeah. What? But with that, who got the last minute fish?
Andy. Oh, yeah, that was Andy.
Yeah. 19 minutes into that 20 minutes, I got a fish. So,
yeah.
It's calculated.
The other impression I was going to mention that was based on the one you did is annoying. It's like I have my three kids up here right now. It's hard to have. I mean, it's just hard. It's like a lot of people to manage, all their clothes all wet.
Stealing snacks.
They frustrate me. Like, I want to strangle them. But I do like them to... I think it's valuable for them to see like what goes into utilities. Do you know what I mean? Like to get a better understanding of stuff, how stuff functions, water, how to fix everything, right?
Oh yeah.
How to be all moldy and everything.
Oh, it's perfect.
I'm
be all wet and moldy all the time.
I'm blown away by your kids.
I'm impressed.
How to get your feet so they got trench foot.
They're tough. They're
in
tough kids.
In 2021.
Man, those kids, they're out there in the pouring rain playing with, like, one didn't have a raincoat on. It was like cold and they just.
Going for it.
Like, nothing phases
them. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I don't know when people turn into babies, but.
Nothing phases them.
They went out there by themselves in a canoe and came back with three fish. And we were like, what?
Yeah, no, that was good. Yeah, they drive me nuts. But I do like them to be exposed to stuff. Because yeah, they got, cool. I mean, like at our normal house, they got gravy.
Mm-hmm.
Gravy.
Mm-hmm.
Their mom, like, oh, you need the extra snack. You know, like just all the time, man. That's not what she sounds like, but you get what I'm saying. They just have it like totally made.
Yeah. And here it's like you have to ration those pretzels or you're not going to get any for the next 3 days.
Like life has just served them on like a platter.
I don't think
day,
Rosie
man.
Liked our boat. She went to Jimmy when we switched kids and Jimmy was like, yeah, she was telling me how many rules you guys have on your boat. Because we're all like, every time, like we get out there at like 8:45 and about 9:15, she's like, can I have a snack? And we're like, we have the whole day to save this food. And yeah. next thing you know, it's open and she's in there.
You had the late 20s boat, but all we have experience with is dogs. So we were like,
yep.
It's hard to take care of a little kid.
We're like, sit.
Sit. Stay.
Shut up. Never taught my dog how to shut up. All right, Chester, hit me with your impression. Southeast Alaska, in a nutshell.
Oh, man.
In a chestnut shell.
In a chestnut shell, that's going to be difficult. But first, I just want to paint a picture. I'm like sitting here next to my wife in a little tiny shack, and it's a shack.
Yeah, we used to call it a cabin. My wife's like, it's not a cabin.
Yep. But it's there's fish.
It's something less than a cabin.
There's fish posters hanging on the wall, books. I got coffee sitting next to me. I'm looking through a window. And whoever painted that window didn't know how to cut very well when they were painting the,
I've noticed that.
Painting the frame.
It's like they were drunk.
But in a
or
way,
a child.
In a way, I like it. So there's paint on the window. I'm looking into like a mid-tide, not a low tide. Cal's mother was out on the beach picking.
Flipping rocks. That's all that.
Flipping rocks and digging around for shells. And not. 30, no, probably 100 yards past that, the kids were catching salmon not too long ago. And there's boats parked out on a little floating dock that we take out every morning into the ocean, basically, into other coves and fish for halibut. And Cal and Steve did diving. Like, there's just dough for scallops, and there's just so much life. And it's hard for me to put it in a chestnut shell, but I'm the kind of guy that likes to experience, like, I want to fish for salmon, I want to dive, I want to do all this stuff, and I wish we had more time.
It's all here.
But
you never got to dive.
Never got to dive. So, I mean, it's an amazing place. I could see myself, like, spending some serious time up here and not getting bored. Yeah, I just wish we didn't have to leave. We got to go to a wedding, which it'll be good.
In case you're listening.
But I wish we had more time. But I mean, I appreciate you having us up here.
Yeah, it's hard to leave.
I was almost like bummed yesterday a little bit.
That it was winding down.
Yeah. And I ran out of chew.
Starting to shake.
You ran out of dip?
Yeah.
It's good.
What's up? Is that why you're smacking that gum right now?
Yeah.
Because your body's like, your body wants some chew so bad?
Not really. But.
Yeah, it's the second piece since we've done this.
Is that nicotine gum?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's Trident.
All right, Don. Impressions?
All right. I've already been thinking about this. First of all, I will say I'm so excited to try the food. Like, finally, I came up here, like I said earlier, Chester warned me, like, hey, you have to try this food. That's all we're going to eat. And I, at home, you know, I don't really practice the palette of different foods. And so coming up here, I already knew, I mentally was like, okay, I'm going to try some food. But not only just trying it, it's like we literally caught it just this afternoon and we are packing it. We're, you know, I just love the working. I love waking up the way we got, I finally get into rhythm, packing the boats, what needed to go in what coolers, and getting everyone assembled, getting all the kids dressed, and you know, who's going what boat. It finally felt like really good to have an order and like go out and really fish. And
now you're going to that stupid wedding.
Catching my first fish was really cool. And obviously I think you might've heard it.
I did.
But I,
from hundreds of yards away.
I get.
We thought your boat was sinking.
I get really excited even catching like a little, you know, this big of a fish. So out here, I knew it was going to be a different experience. So the fishing was great. The halibut was incredible. I will say another one actually I really enjoyed was when you took Julie, Kelsey, and I to shrimp for the first time. Mm-hmm. It was just a perfect setting. It was cool that you taught us like what to do. Like you didn't just like, you really just told us what to do. And I felt like it was cool. Because sometimes people will show you physically, but you like literally just told us you need to do this, you need to do that, go for it. And obviously we looked, Kelsey and I looked at each other like, oh shit, right, we gotta pull it together. And it was really cool to watch the process. And then on our way back, seeing that killer whale, that was one thing I really wanted to see on this trip. I was like, just the marine, so bio, like, you know, the wildlife is just so different than what I've seen. Because also, you know, I'm scared of everything. And out here I feel like, I got some acclimation. I'm not scared of bears anymore. I saw a lot of bears.
Not scared of killer whales?
No. I literally was so excited about them.
So you guys were fishing. You were profoundly influenced by Free Willy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess when I watched that a lot when I was a kid, and I just loved that whale. And I just think that they're just like a boss of the ocean. I don't know. They're just something different. I mean, you see blue. I feel like you would see, I've seen different types of whales in California, like the humpback. I just never really seen a killer whale unless, you know, unfortunately I went to SeaWorld once. But
I will say Danielle approached this trip with the way that she approaches everything in her life, which is like feverish enthusiasm and fun. And it was really cool to watch you do that.
Yeah, I was pretty excited. You guys were fishing off the boat, and I was like, there's a whale!
Oh, yeah,
you
almost
got, you got a little teary.
I got really close to tearing. Yeah. I was like, whoa, that's really there. It was, I don't know, I just felt like I really want, yeah. And then my last impression is, for photography, I just visually, like, so I obviously photograph weddings and people a lot, and I knew I really wanted to grow my visual artistic abilities out here, and I really wanted to, you know, look at life in a different way, and versus just when you photograph people, it's so different than photographing stuff like this. And to be able to go home and show my experience, like through documenting it, and like not just like, oh, here's a pretty picture, like really documenting what, like how we fish, not like the pretty picture. And anyway, it was really exciting.
What's your range? Like plug your wedding photography business.
Oh, yeah. My name is Danielle. My wedding photography business is Danielle Lopez Photo on Instagram. What do you mean? What's my range?
How far do you travel to photograph a wedding?
I'm actually wanting to travel. Like, that's my whole goal, is to get out and travel. And because I guess because I love being a visual learner, I mean, visual artist, I would say Bozeman's getting saturated. Like, I'm in the same venue, same areas, and I really flourish when I'm in new places and I see different, because I feel like I see things differently than others.
Yeah.
Hard to explain it, but that's also why I feel like I'm meant to do this job, because I see things differently than others. So being out here, I was like, oh, you know, constantly. And so.
And so people, if they want to see your wedding, do you post your wedding photography on that?
Yeah, it's on Instagram. Yep.
What is it again?
So it's Danielle Lopez Photo. On Instagram.
And people can hire you to come photograph their wedding. But you're kind of filled up now.
Next year is getting there. This year I'm at 21 weddings. Next year it's not even like, I'm already at like 10. So, and I have like 8 emails to answer. So
how many
it's
do you
exciting.
Do a year?
I think I'm capping it at 20. But I really wanted to trigger more of like the intimate, like smaller weddings, because I feel like that's just where it is. It's not about like all the glamour and like the details. I just love like capturing connections, mm-hmm. and actually like genuine photographs in my opinion.
Cut some people off the list. Like, you don't need to invite everybody.
Call down.
Yep. Call Don.
Call Don, I'm here.
Don.
I'll bring, oh.
Let her capture your intimate moments.
Yeah. The one thing the one thing I'll add about this trip that I mean, the only downfall is we ran out of booze.
Yeah.
We had no beer. We're cutting up fish. Like, how can we make a cocktail around here?
Back when I drank a lot, we used to buy cases of vodka and leave it up here. Cases of handles.
Well, there's some.
We could have got a little crazy with the liquor, but we ran out of beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me up here and Chester up. It just, the invite was incredibly special.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. All right, Chef Andy, impressions.
Well.
Plug your business. Yeah, are you still doing catering?
Yeah. Yeah, well, everything kind of
plug away, man.
Kind of slow down.
What a creative little table full of people. So cute.
Yeah, that is cool.
Well, obviously, I've been fortunate enough to come. This is my 13th straight year coming up here, so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah, 13 straight years. So I feel very, very lucky to be a part of this. And obviously, that being said, I've made a lifetime of memories over those 13 years. And that's kind of the obvious is the company up here. It's just a great group of people. And over the years, I've got to meet so many different people because, like, here it is, like, a table full of people I've never met before. And over the years, it's been that way. You guys are always bringing in quality people here. So it's been a pleasure getting to know so many different people through the course of the last decade plus up here. And then that being said, being able to be a big part of this and put my culinary spin on things and be able to cook for people, which tends to bring some sort of joy to people, I guess, when you have good food in a setting like this.
Oh,
my
absolutely.
Wife,
yeah. Are you kidding?
My wife is like, when she's planning on coming here, she's very interested in overlapping.
Yeah, she checks my schedule.
She wants to know what Andy's schedule is going to be.
Brings it up. Next
well, that
level.
Being said, and one of the biggest things for me is I catch myself a lot just kind of laughing, just like the pure like spoils of this place. Like any given night, I'll be staring down the barrel of literally hundreds and hundreds of dollars of seafood like on the market, like and I've got just all of it at my disposal to play with. It sometimes it's just mind-boggling, like when I'm looking at all this fresh Dungeness and prawns and halibut, and I mean it's sometimes it's like overwhelming. And the fact that it's so direct, because you go to the grocery store and you're seeing that nice little packet of cellophane salmon, and you think about the fishermen, the deckhands, the processing ship, then it goes to the, you know, to the canneries, then to the truck driver, to the, you think about how many, and then to the grocery store handler, like how many people have their hands in that. We're here. It's like you're waking up in the morning, you're going to get that personally processing and taking great care of that product, only to then turn around and like be able to share it with people. Not only right now, but then down the line, we take the care to package it, you know, rinse everything really well, get home on that snowy, you know, December night when you're cracking that pack of halibut open, and it's like, you guys are right there.
Yep.
That's one of my favorite parts of this whole place. It's like, and then I take that and then share it. I mean, I could, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of people have experienced this fish from this cabin through the years that I've, you know, I just give the stuff away a lot. Just like, hey, you guys need halibut for your dinner night? Here you go. Like, I love being able to take this experience and then pass it along. So
that's cool.
This place keeps on giving.
13 years.
All year round, this place keeps on giving. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great, man.
Yeah. I know. I'm looking forward to many more.
Cal, did you hit your impressions yet? Then we're going to wrap it up because Seth's got to get on the old airplane to go to that stupid wedding.
Sorry, Bill.
it'll be a fun wedding.
Chester, oh, did you get your speech done?
No.
Oh, yeah. You want to preview your speech for everybody, Chester?
Yeah, Chester's the best man. That's like...
We have to go, yeah.
No, I hope this wedding's great. You're going to say some nice stuff about her. Give me an idea.
Her?
Oh, about her?
The bride.
Oh, beautiful.
You're going to say she's beautiful?
Ashley, you're truly too good for Bill.
Okay.
Since I'm the best man here at this wedding, I don't know why you're not marrying me.
Okay. Totally cool. There's one joke.
Scrap that.
No. You don't want to talk about it.
No, I'm just going to have some talking points that I'm going to write down and just kind of wing it in a way, but have some structure to it.
Yeah. It'll be good. You throw some jokes in?
Yeah, you
Yeah, probably. They'll be bad. They'll be bad jokes. But why not?
So you're going to say something nice about her, say something nice about him.
Tell a little story in there about how...
He was so drunk.
Yep.
No.
Yep. And, you know, toast and... I think you should
mention the chicken petition. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
They started a petition in Belgrade.
Serious chicken petition that they started, so that'll be something.
Oh, they're chicken crusaders to try to be allowed to have chickens in their yard?
In Belgrade.
They're going hard on it.
Okay. When you see Seth, when he's got his shirt buttoned, unbuttoned down to his belt.
Smoking a cigar.
And he's got a tie tied around his head.
Oh, do you see that picture?
Send him home.
Wasn't that the
That's my favorite Seth
look. Send him home.
Seth look.
The minute he ties a necktie around his head as a headband.
Okay. No, we're ready to party.
I didn't do that at Chet's wedding because we wore bolo ties.
That was part of it.
So if he's got a bolo tie around his head like a headband, send him home.
Copy.
All right, Cal.
Oh,
did you already do yours?
Nah, yeah. Diving, lots of life.
Can we give a shout out to Cal's mom?
Yeah.
Real quick?
My God. Yeah.
Oh.
Cal's mom
crushed it.
She crushed
Julie's
it.
Julie's awesome.
Then we got to meet Callahan's mom. That was his date.
Yep.
Jack of love.
So, I mean, that's the coolest thing, you know. I'm 38 these days, and that's the first trip that my mom and I have ever done.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And she loves this stuff, and I knew she'd take off out here, and she's very comfortable working. Uncomfortable not working. So she loves little jobs and stuff like that. And so it's nice just being when the first float plane takes off and it's got your mom on it and Steve Ranella, like, you know that they're going to get along just fine because they're going to have plenty of things to work on at the fish shack.
Plenty
in
of
your
chores.
Absence.
She was a hoot.
And yeah, so that was a really, really cool deal. And I know she'll be talking about this forever. She's in heaven out here. And I haven't been up here. I came up a lot after my first stay because we did and ended up coming back here for a show and something else. So I got like a lot in the first year or 2 years, and then I haven't been up here in like 5 years, and yeah, it's just like another spot on that list of places that you're just like aching to come back to before you actually leave, which makes it hard. So you're like, you just want every day to be like the best day. And we've been putting in big days. This is a killer crew. Takes 72 hours up here for folks to settle in, get in a rhythm from what I saw this trip. And
figure out how to dry their socks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just, you know, all the things.
The dryer.
And, we're breaking up the band too soon.
Ugh.
We're sad.
All right, well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Special edition. Shack of Love.
Thanks,
coming at you.
Thank you.
Not live. From the fish shack.
Shack of Love.
Let's go catch some fish.
Let's go. Tune in next week.